You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we actually forgot to mention a snap rally that's happening this Saturday. Say no to trans exclusionary red femmes, rad femmes. It's going to be at 4 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, the 18th of April, outside the Supreme Court on Lonsdale Street. Protest against the lesbian action group's Supreme Court case. And thank you, comrades at 3CR Studio, for reminding us of that one. All right, we've got on the line for you, Fatima Yazbek. Are you there, Fatima?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Let me introduce you to listeners. Fatima is a human rights advocate and member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also from the Lebanese community. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chloe.
So, Fatima, just firstly, can you please address the negotiations between Lebanon and Israel at this point, and also this 10-day ceasefire?
Yeah. To begin with the negotiations, the vast majority of the Lebanese people reject these negotiations because when we talk about these negotiations between Lebanon and Israel, we have to start with a basic reality that you cannot negotiate under bombardment. Lebanon is being asked to sit at the table while its villages and cities are destroyed, its people displaced, and its land occupied. That is not diplomacy. That is pressure dressed up as dialogue. While Israel is committing another genocide, same to what it did in Gaza, in Lebanon. And the other problem is that the current Lebanese authority lacks legitimacy because it has repeatedly acted in ways that undermine coexistence among the Lebanese communities. And that is a breach of the Lebanese constitution. Instead of uniting the country in the face of the aggression and the ongoing war, it has aligned itself with foreign agendas, distanced itself from the suffering of the people who are under bombardment, and failed to defend the rights of all Lebanese equally. So this authority cannot protect its people. It cannot represent them in the negotiations. So when such a political class enters talks, it does so without a national mandate. It does not speak for the displaced families or the communities under fire or the people who believe Lebanon has the right to defend itself. It speaks from weakness and disconnection. Opposing these negotiations is not opposing peace, as they claim. It is opposing a process designed to strip Lebanon of its right to resist, to legitimize Israeli aggression, and to impose outcomes that Lebanese people never agreed to. Regarding the ceasefire, the 10-day ceasefire, the ceasefire has come into effect like just over an hour ago, but Israel has violated the ceasefire at least 8 times in this hour. It is still bombing the villages in South Lebanon, and the drones are still flying over the Lebanese villages and cities. So it didn't comply. It didn't abide, or it failed to meet its obligations once again after all the violations and that they did during the more than 15 months of putting the war on hold.
Yeah, thanks for that, Fatima. And it's Jacob here, who's one of the co-presenters. I want to kind of, the next question I kind of want to ask is that more than 1 million people have been told to evacuate South Lebanon by Israel, which has bombed it, killing and injuring many thousands. What can you tell us about the scale of the Israeli occupation of Southern Lebanon? And, you know, why, and do you think that Israel is trying to make a permanent land grab for Southern Lebanon?
Yes, Israel has been trying to occupy all the south of the Litani River since 2024. They did succeed in occupying, they started with 5 points, and those increased to 17 points just before the restarting of the war, because the war didn't didn't actually like end between November 2024 and March 2026. It was still ongoing, but from one side. So they succeeded in occupying few points before March. From the beginning of March until today, they succeeded in occupying the very front line villages, a few villages there, because they are facing resistance in these villages, and they couldn't force the resistance to evacuate these villages. What is happening in southern Lebanon is not a borderline. It's not a border incident. They are trying to to do a large scale military occupation. Entire villages have been nearly emptied because some Lebanese people didn't agree to leave their villages. Homes, farms, and infrastructure have been destroyed. Roads and bridges are unusable. Yesterday, they destroyed the last bridge that connect southern of the Litani River to the rest of Lebanon. So it's now nearly isolated from the rest of Lebanon. Large areas are now uninhabitable because of the unexploded ordnance and constant bombardment. So when you push people out, destroy their homes, and then talk about security zones or buffer areas, it starts to look very much like a land grab. Israel occupied southern Lebanon for decades until 2000, when they were forced to leave, to evacuate. And there is a clear historical precedent here. Do I think Israel is trying to make a permanent land grab? At the very least, it is trying to create a new reality on the ground, a depopulated, militarized strip that serves its security doctrine, regardless of the Lebanese sovereignty. Whether they call it a buffer zone or something else, the effect is the same. Lebanese land and Lebanese lives are treated as expendable. Why is this? Because, why do I believe they are trying to land grab? Because Netanyahu revealed his plan and map of a greater Israel, and he's indeed going through that path.
Some people say that one of the reasons for Israel bombing Christian villages and other villages which are not connected to Hezbollah is that Israel is trying to make people scared of taking in refugees from southern Lebanon and trying to create sectarian violence and division in Lebanon. Fatima, what is your view? What is the situation for refugees from southern Lebanon when they seek refuge in other parts of Lebanon?
Yes, what you mentioned is correct, and I just want to mention one thing, is that the refugees aren't only from southern Lebanon. They are from the southern suburbs of Beirut and from some villages in the Bekaa region. So, bombing these villages that you mentioned, it completely exposes the false narrative that this is a war not against Lebanon, it's only against Hezbollah. So when they target communities that have no military presence, they are sending a message to all the Lebanese that no one is safe. One very plausible interpretation is that Israel is trying to engineer sectarian tension because that helps them to implement their plan. By bombing Christian villages, it fuels resentment. So why are we suffering for a war that we didn't choose or we don't agree with? That anger can easily be redirected toward displaced people or toward the Shia communities in Lebanon in specific, or toward the idea of resistance itself. It's a classic divide and rule strategy. As for refugees, their situation is extremely difficult because they had to flee to areas already struggling economically. The rents are skyrocketing at this point. Schools and hospitals are overwhelmed. Some host communities feel abandoned by the state and they resent the pressure. Others welcome the displaced people, but they lack the resources. So when Israel bombs the very areas receiving refugees, or when political actors try to blame the displaced families for instability, because it happened like in a few areas where there is political disagreement between the people who lives in these areas and the displaced people. So this deepens the risk of internal conflict and makes displacement a weapon, not just against the South, but against the Lebanese community.
So Fatima, what can you say? Can you comment a bit on the historic relationship between Hezbollah and Iran and the war unleashed by the US in Israel? If time, you can also comment on Hezbollah's leadership and its relationship to the state of Lebanon.
Okay. So to clarify one very clear reality that Hezbollah was formed after the Israeli invasion in 1982. So Hezbollah was formed as a result for the invasion. If Israel didn't invade Lebanon, there wouldn't be Hezbollah. So their origins are rooted in Lebanese resistance to Israeli occupation. Iran supported Hezbollah, yes, but Iran didn't invent the grievances. Those came from decades of invasion, bombing, and humiliation. Hezbollah emerged because the Lebanese state was unable or not allowed to defend its own territory. The U.S. and Israel framed this as an Iranian proxy war, but the framing erases the central fact that Lebanon was occupied and resistance grew from that reality. The current war is being justified in the language of security and deterrence, but in practice it is an attempt to weaken Hezbollah and to reassert the U.S.-Israeli dominance in the region. As for Hezbollah's leadership and its relationship with the Lebanese state, it is a bit complex because Hezbollah is not only one wing. It is both a resistance movement and a major political actor, and it represents a good chunk of the Lebanese population. It has ministers, social institutions, schools, hospitals and medical facilities, and a large support base. Independent military capacity creates tension with the idea of a unified state monopoly on force, but that tension exists only because the state has repeatedly failed to protect its people. If Lebanon had been able to defend its territory, Hezbollah wouldn't have had the same space to grow as an armed resistance, and the international system's failure to protect Lebanon repeatedly created the conditions for Hezbollah's role. So there were international resolutions have been issued against Israel since 1978, so like years before Hezbollah was formed. There were resolution 425 and 426. Where the Israelis, were these resolutions implemented, or did Israel abide by these resolutions? No. So, yeah.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has still said nothing about these war crimes, and the Foreign Minister Penny Wong is blaming Iran, even after Trump's blasting on April 7th, saying that a whole civilization will die tonight, terrifying many into believing that we are on the brink of World War III or even a nuclear attack. Fatima, what do you think we should be demanding of the Albanese Labor government right now?
The silence of the Prime Minister on clear war crimes and the decision by the Foreign Minister Penny Wong to focus the blame on Iran while downplaying the Israeli aggression is morally indefensible. It sends a message that some lives matter less than others and that some states are effectively above international law. As for Trump's statement on April 7th, a whole civilization will die tonight, it terrified people around the world. In that moment, Australia should have stood firmly for de-escalation and international law. Instead, the government chose caution towards Washington and indulgence toward Israel. So what should we demand of the Albanese government right now? First, a clear public call for an immediate ceasefire and an end to Israel's invasion and bombardment of Lebanon. Not a vague language about this de-escalation, but a direct condemnation of attacks on civilians and occupation of Lebanese territory. Two, the suspension of all military cooperation, arms sales, and intelligence sharing that could support or enable Israeli operations. Three, strong support for international investigations into war crimes and crimes against humanity, including at ICC, without double standards. And the last point is we should demand that Australia stop echoing U.S. talking points that reduce everything to Iranian aggression and instead recognize the core issue, the rights of peoples under occupation and bombardment to resist, and the obligation of states like Australia to stand with international law, not with impunity.
All right. Just want to see if you have any kind of... I think this has been a very good interview, Fanima. And I guess, do you have any final comments that you'd like to make before we finish up the interview?
Yes, I just want to... I just think that there is one final point that I think it's essential. Lebanon today is facing an attempt to redefine its identity, its borders, and its political future through force. What is happening is not a temporary escalation. It is a decisive moment that will shape the future of Lebanon, the future of the state, and the future of coexistence among Lebanese communities. Lebanese people deserve a political leadership that stands with them, not above them, that defends their unity, not undermines it, and that refuses to trade away their rights under the pressure of foreign powers. Finally, I would like to address the international community. If it truly wants stability, then it must address the root causes, occupation, aggression, and the systematic violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Peace cannot be built on the ruins of villages or on the displacement of entire communities. Peace begins with justice, and justice begins with ending the aggression.
Well, we really appreciate your time today, Fatima. If listeners are just tuning in, we are speaking to Fatima Yazbek, who is a human rights advocate and member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also part of the Lebanese community. Thank you, Fatima. It's been really great talking to you, and we also would like to extend our solidarity with you and the Lebanese people and the community here too.
Thank you very much for having me.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks again, yeah. Fatima.